Welcome back to a new episode of Too Many Trailers, the podcast where we talk about movie trailers. My name's Kelsey.
I'm Marianne.
And yeah, we have two fun ones, I think.
One like really fun nostalgic and one just like really amazing. We're going to talk for a really long time about it.
Absolutely. I screamed for the entire 2.5 minutes and cried for the entire 2.5 minutes during that second trailer.
I was wondering which trailer you were talking about. I was like, I screamed and cried during that one too. And then you said 2.5 minutes and I was like, nope,
never.
I did not scream during it.
So the trailers we have for you this week are
The Lion King and
If Beale Street Could Talk for the second trailer.
So this is following our kind of two themes we've got going right now. So we're trying to cover as many Oscar-nominated films as we can. And also we're recording this and it's going to be released in the month of February. We're doing all films with either leading Black actors and actresses or mainly Black crews, or a combination of both. So we're trying to hit all of those categories. And
I think we covered a good amount, and especially in these two.
These two in all of our regular episodes, not including our bonus episodes. One bonus episode will be specific to that, but not the other one that was released for the Oscars.
Last week. Which you can get on iTunes and Anchor and Overcast. If you rate and subscribe, you can get them every other Tuesday.
Very exciting, except for this month, where you get one all the freaking time.
You're getting 4 weeks of us screaming into microphones about movie
on
trailers.
On this week, where this one, on the day that this is airing, you'll also be getting another one in just a few short days.
Guys.
Because we lost our minds this month.
I've never talked this much. Oh, that's a lie.
I was like, don't even lie. Don't lie to these people that are listening to us.
It's hard to say I've never talked this much about movie trailers, like, professionally, you know? I've talked about it and screamed about it off air.
In our lives.
Yes, but this is a whole new territory.
Yeah, this was a lot for 1 month.
Oh my god, yeah. Can we please go back to 2 a month after this?
I can't wait for March.
I'm so excited.
But yeah, so two really great trailers, one Oscar nominated that we're looking forward to discussing more and seeing what other people think about during the Oscars.
So this is being posted after the Oscars,
so
hopefully If Beale Street Could Talk picks up some hardware, crossing our fingers, you know.
Definitely.
But we'll see how that turns out since we were recording 2 days before The Night of the Stars.
Yes, and we will be posting 2 days after. But we will be live tweeting along. So you'll be able to get our, like, in-the-moment feelings and reactions.
If you can go back on our Twitter page.
Which is at Too Many Trailers, T-W-O Many Trailers. I feel like we're ending the episode.
I know. This is so...
We're done.
We're done. Bye, guys.
It's been a great 3 minutes.
Talk to you next week.
Anyway, moving right along.
So the first trailer we have for you today is going to be The Lion King. I don't know why I gave it such a chagrined.
Because it's a grand movie.
It is very grand. Beyonce, isn't it?
It's grand even in the original format.
But Beyonce.
Yes, I understand that, but it's also a really good movie.
It is. 1991. 94. 91 was Beauty and the Beast. That's right. Which won the Oscar for Best Picture? 1992.
As Kelsey just said, we're going to talk about The Lion King first. So should we talk about some behind the trailer facts?
Yeah. All right. So the director is Jon Favreau, who you probably know as Happy from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And if you aren't a person that watches the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I don't know what you know him from, but probably a lot of things.
He's
like,
very famous, yeah.
He was the Doctor in Elf, so maybe.
Oh, great reference.
Did you know he directed Elf?
Yeah.
I don't remember these facts. Anyway, so he did Elf and Iron Man 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And also, Cowboys and Aliens.
That's a classic. That was the one with Daniel Craig and Megan Fox.
Not Megan Fox, Olivia Wilde. So, anyway, so you might know him from directing Elf or Iron Man 1 or 2 or the really terrible film Cowboys and Aliens.
He also directed the independent film called Chef, which is actually a phenomenal film about a Latinx cuisine. Oh. And in Cuba and Cuban cuisine, and Robert Downey Jr. has a very good...
That's why you know it very well.
Well, I've also, it's a very good film. He also has a small little cameo in it. Anyway,
so the writers... Hold on. I wrote it really small because I thought I would fit it all on one line, and then I didn't. So Brenda Chapman, who wrote the actual, like, story, also wrote Brave, and she came up with the original idea for Fantasia.
What? How old is she?
I don't know, she didn't look that old in her IMDb photo, but...
It could be also an old photo, but Fantasia was from, like, 19...
No, so she, like, when, not Fantasia 2000, but she, like, came up with the original idea for parts of Fantasia, but I was just like,
heh? How old is she?
I don't know.
Good for her.
But I'm gonna reread that effect later on the internet and make any changes that need to be made. And she also is credited for writing or contributing to the stories for the original 1994 Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Wow. Damn.
I was like, I trust you. You're great. Wonderful.
We also have Jeff Nathanson, who wrote the screenplay.
He has done animated films is the Lego version of Indiana Jones.
An Oscar contender.
Pretty sure I've had to watch that. Not great. He also did Pirates of the Caribbean 4.
Ooh, another great addition.
Not too much else. And then he did the real Indiana Jones, though, and that's the stuff.
Which one?
Two of them?
Hopefully not Crystal Skull, because that one was not good.
I don't think so, but okay. I didn't pay attention that much.
So the characters are by Irene Mekki. Jonathan Roberts, not the John Roberts you're thinking of, and Linda Wolverton.
I know. All right.
Do you have a composer for
it? I sure do. Kelsey, do you know who the composer is for this?
I do not. Is it going to be that one composer that we just know and love?
A few that we know and love.
Alan Silvestri?
No, think Disney.
Hans Zimmer. And Danny Elfman?
It's just Hans Zimmer on this.
Oh, I love Hans Zimmer.
So if you guys have heard us talking about him recently, it's because he's done a whole bunch of films in the year 2018, including Widows, where we talked about him last.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And also Blue Planet 2. I love Blue Planet movies because they're a happy thing about the ocean.
And all the impending death and eating that happens on there as well.
Yep. It's all fine. Let's move right along to the cast, shall we?
Absolutely.
Are you ready, Kelsey? Because, like, everybody listening, you guys might not be ready. This cast is...
It's wild. There's a lot of...
Out of control.
This cast honestly gave me whiplash at times.
As they were flashing them across the screen in the trailer? Yeah.
We have Donald Glover, Seth Rogen, Chitwell Ejiofor, Keegan-Michael Key, Amy Sedaris, James Earl Jones, Billy Eichner, Alfre Nudard, Beyonce, Eric Andre, John Connie, John Oliver, Florence Kasumba, J.D. McCrary, and
the one, the only,
Shahadi Wright Joseph, who's also in Us.
Did you say James Earl Jones?
I did. James Earl Jones.
Damn it. I missed you saying it, and that's what I was thinking was going to be the one and the only, and that's why I was
wrong. No, he has a much bigger presence and probably is
no, I know.
Listed earlier because he's such an iconic voice.
I know. That's what we're going to talk about right now.
Do you want to jump right into the trailer talk?
Yeah, let's do it. Jesus.
Instant nostalgia. Instant nostalgia.
And it's just like, so my opening note is gorgeous, and then it's just the voice, because, like, it's James Earl Jones, you just...
Between his voice
and you know it.
between his voice and, like, the CGI that, like, was present. The CGI, first of all, I need to just, like, sit down for a moment. Because who...
So
oh, my God.
Good.
So the rendering is phenomenal. I mean, I know that, like, it looks really similar to, like, what the Jungle Book did, which Jon Favreau also directed. Which was, like, a film, I believe, for Netflix, I want to say. Oh, no, I'm thinking of Mowgli. Never mind.
Mowgli,
excuse me. I know he probably used, like, the same team because I don't know if they used, like, tracking or something. It's phenomenal.
It's so good.
I literally wrote, holy shit.
I wrote gorgeous, but I also circled it a few times.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, amazing. Like, I was, like, when you see Rafiki come up, I was like,
oh my God,
Rafiki.
It's like, you can tell.
Holy moly.
But he looks like a baboon, though.
He looks like Rafiki. Oh my God. He looks like the real life Rafiki. It's blowing my mind. Like, I'm gonna watch that movie and probably have to see it 85
probably.
Times
I would
really process, like, holy shit.
I don't think you cannot see this in IMAX. I think this is a one made for IMAX, made for Dolby Digital, like, big screen effects. And that's what's, like, when I'm watching this teaser trailer, like, that's what I'm getting. Like, that's what I'm getting the sense of. Like, you're gonna have to, like, I don't know what I'm doing with my hands. You're gonna have to, like, soak in
all of it. Like, you're gonna need all of your senses.
Yeah.
Also, I just thought about seeing the stampede scene and, like, the Mufasa's death scene in Dolby Digital, and I was like, oh, that's too much. That's too much.
It's too much sensory.
Too much. I will not recover.
When the stampede scene. Like, showed.
When they showed it,
I was like, oh my God, that looks so real. And I was like, oh my God, am I going to get run over by a yak? Like, what's going to happen?
I was like, why would you ever put that scene? Like, they didn't show it, like, in a bad way. They just showed, like, a lot of animals running in a stampede.
Just,
they didn't show, like, anything crazy during the trailer. But I was just like, oh God. I was like, oh no, it's real. It's going to happen.
I mean, I use this a lot in, I put this in the bottom of my notes, but. I feel like a lot of the scenes were supposed to be nostalgia hits.
Oh, absolutely.
So to kind of get those people who, you know, grew up with this film, you know, with, like, the cartoon version, and to try and then be like, holy shit, I gotta go back. Because a lot of these people who were able to consciously, like, watch this film when it came out probably have children at this point. Like, older generation millennials and everything. Like, I almost said patient. The people who have, like, are, like, 38 and, like, you know, having two children.
Like,
yeah, even just.
I feel like my sisters and, like, your siblings probably saw it in theaters.
Probably.
Because 94. So, like, my sister was six.
Yeah.
Six. So, like, and now she has a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
like my sister was nine.
Your sister, yeah.
Yeah. And my brother would be.
Six.
Six, yeah, exactly. So, I feel like. Yeah, exactly. So, it's like one of those things where this is probably more meant.
I think it's meant for everybody.
I mean, no, of course, it's meant for everybody,
like,
but I feel like this teaser trailer specifically is meant for people who watched the film, like, consciously when they were younger and going, like, oh my God, I remember this. This is a stampede scene. This is a scene where he puts the
or
blood over
that,
his...
Do the,
not the
or,
blood.
Yeah, it's like, part of a fruit...
Like, juice, like, over his...
On his forehead.
Unibrow, you know.
On his unibrow. Baby Simba. He's just a baby.
On his fur, I should say.
Yeah.
I'm trying to relate him to a human.
Poor Simba.
But one of those things is a nostalgia bomb. It's just pop right into your mind.
Absolutely. Like, when you saw, like, the paw print, like, when you see the little paw print in Mufasa's paw print, I was like...
I screamed.
I was like, I love that scene.
It's so
in this movie.
Cute, and the way his little paw spreads out, and they got, like, the CGI got the gravity right and everything, too, and I was like, damn.
And I think that a lot of people are also gonna love this because, like, damn, Baby Simba's so cute.
That's what everyone on Twitter, when the teaser trailer, like, first dropped, everyone's like, I want this Simba.
I know, and not, like, cartoon Simba's really cute, too, when he's baby, but, like, oh my God, a real-life baby lion?
Want one, but not to scratch my face off.
Right. Like, I want one, but to look at and cuddle and have it be act like a cat.
Exactly. I mean, I have Simba for a pet, but that would be weird if it was a lion.
So this is technically a teaser trailer, which we should have started off with, but we got too excited.
We're just like, we gotta talk about it.
But we really wanted to talk about it now because
the cast alone, because of the fact that we have, you know, probably 90% are people of color, and which I really like, first of all, but I also like the casting choices. I want to say, like, for Timon and Pumbaa is so perfectly cast in terms of a comedic voice, and having, you know, Donald Glover, you have James Earl Jones. Oh, wait, I think that Seth Rogen might be Pumbaa.
I was going to say Seth
I think
Rogen
Seth
is
Rogen,
one
yeah,
of
Yeah, Seth Rogen is probably Pumbaa. I think John Oliver is, might be the toucan?
Zazu.
I think he might be Zazu. I mean, this is all stuff I can look up on an internet movie database.
But it's all stuff you people can look up, too.
And I feel like Billy Eichner might be...
I think he's Timon.
Timon, which would make sense. I'm not sure who Amy Sedaris might be. I don't think she's credited really on an internet movie database as, like, a character.
Is she gonna be Nala?
Mm-mm. I think Beyonce's
no,
Nala.
No, Beyonce is gonna be Sarabi.
Okay. Well, Amy Sedaris is white, so...
Yeah, I know. I'm hoping. That's why I was just like...
Keegan-Michael Key is Kamari.
Okay.
Amy Sedaris is uncredited as a voice actress. I mean, she's, like, credited, but she doesn't have a character.
She doesn't have a character?
It's interesting to see.
So she's probably just another lioness.
Yeah. Eric Andre's a ZZ, so I'm guessing...
Yep.
Billy Eichner's Timon.
Okay.
And Seth Rogen's Pumbaa. Yeah, Eric Andre might be... a hyena.
He's probably Ed.
Probably. He has that voice.
Oh, Ed.
Oh, Ed.
All right.
Anyways.
So yeah, we wanted to talk about the cast right away. Also, I feel like we didn't... This is a movie because we all know the plot. Like, this isn't something that we really needed a full trailer to review it with.
Right,
like,
that's why it was...
We didn't really need it because we didn't need to wait that long for it. We didn't need, like... Nobody needs us to be like, oh, and what, I wonder what else is going to be revealed in the
plot.
Like,
we know
like,
what's
going to
happen.
Obviously, if you change anything in this plot, people are going to lose their shit.
I mean,
so
they almost changed the genie's blue color, and then people lost their shit, and now look what we're left with. Unfortunately for Aladdin. Hopefully that trailer comes out soon, because I have thoughts on that.
We'll cover that soon, don't worry, everyone.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about how much of the music they're re-recording.
Because
when they started with the opening sequence,
I mean,
I was
like halfway through the teaser trailer.
Yeah, which I'm surprised they held it off that long,
to
be 100% honest. Like, I thought it was going to be the opening, and then they didn't open with it. But when you hear the opening of, like, for the opening part of The Circle of Life and all that, I was like, oh, this sounds the exact same, but then in the middle you could tell it was different.
Right.
But I was like, are we going to re-record all of the song? Like, all the, like, background stuff,
I think
too?
So, because...
Like, I know that they're going to re-record all the songs with lyrics.
Right, exactly.
But I'm wondering
but
if they were going to re-record the score.
I hope so. They kind of, like, freshen it up a bit. I hope they don't, you know, kind of make it as basic as it was. Even though it was amazing, it was revolutionary at the time. They do have the implements and resources now to make it sound fuller and more appropriate to the remastered CGI, quote-unquote, live action that they're going to be doing. So I feel like they at least, I mean, it's Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with Hans Zimmer.
You know what I also want to know?
Mm-hmm.
Is who's doing, like baby Simba's voice, like singing voice?
J.D. McCrary, I think, and then Shahadi Wright-Joseph as Baby Nala.
Okay. I was like, I wonder if the same people that are doing all the voicing are also doing the singing voices, because sometimes those are different.
That's what they generally do in terms of
sometimes,
Disney. Like,
sometimes, not always,
not,
though,
yeah.
Because, like, Ming-Na Wen did two voices, but Lea Salonga usually does her singing voice.
Oh, I see what you mean, like, and,
like
how,
Mulan.
Like, Danny Osmond also was, like, a singing voice for, like, certain actors.
Yeah.
I think now, because people
are moving towards that, for sure, I'm just...
Right. No, I understand.
Because it's not, like, because
they're
it's not.
Kids.
It's, yeah, and sometimes, like, for Coco, the main person, there were two people that did it because, like, in case while they were doing filming and stuff, their voices changed because that's, like, a reality with young boys.
Yeah, especially. It happens, and, you know. But I feel like...
But I was just like, I was like, huh, I wonder if we're doing the same people for singing
It's a teaser trailer. They didn't show really any voices, so... Okay. I mean, I guess we'll find out in the full trailer, but we don't, again, we don't need it. I feel like the teaser trailer is enough. People are still talking about it.
Yeah, and we know, like, we all know The Lion King.
Yeah. And if you don't, please,
refresh
yourself.
Please sit yourself down somewhere right now.
Right the heck now.
Pull your car off of the road where you're commuting to work.
And then just sit an hour and a half in traffic or something.
Pull over into the nearest rest stop or place you can pull over and sit and watch The Lion King.
Watch it now.
Pull over into a place preferably with like some free Wi-Fi and then you can stream it real fast.
Like a truck stop.
Like a truck stop or a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks.
Pull out, flex your AirPods.
Sit, relax, enjoy. Okay.
All right.
So... Yeah, this teaser was...
It was good. Yeah. It made me want to watch the movie.
Yeah, they just really wanted... It was just, like, really to showcase, like, how good the CGI is going to be.
Absolutely.
Their casting choices. Like, their final definite casting choices.
Yeah.
And just to let James Earl Jones talk.
He can narrate my whole life. And if... I feel like if, you know...
Him or Morgan Freeman can talk just forever. That'd be fine.
I wish... Trailer narrations were still a thing. Because I feel like James Earl Jones would have, you know, put up, taken the helm. But
in the same sentence, though, I'm really glad we are not narrating trailers anymore.
Me too. I 100% agree. I'm glad we're not stuck in that inner world. As much as Don DeLaFonte was a master of trailer talks. I'm glad we're not there anymore.
In a world of good and evil.
In a world when things can't quite go the way Tommy wanted to. He had like four voices.
I'm so glad we're past that point in life.
Speaking about Don DeLaFonte and his retirement and untimely death, there's a movie with Lake Bell talking about that, and it's all about her trying to be the new, like, voice narrator. Phenomenal movie. Highly recommended. It's called In a World, Lake Bell. Look it up. Find wherever you can find it legally. Would you see this movie based off this teaser trailer?
I would see this movie if I didn't even see this trailer. Like,
valid.
Like, they honestly, like, they could have just been, like, go in blind, everybody. Like, Disney could have been, like... They could have literally, like, pulled a Beyonce and been like, Lion King's in theaters today, everybody go. Like, they could have.
No, they could have.
And it would have been fine, and they would have done just as well or better.
I think they would have gotten Marvel money for this. I mean, like.
Oh, they're going to.
They're going to.
They're going to get, the amount they're going to get back from this film is going to be enough to pay for this, Dumbo, and Aladdin, because those ones are not going to make
Dumbo
as much,
will,
obviously.
I don't think Dumbo, it's too sad for people, and
Dumbo
Aladdin
is really sad, and there's a lot of animal cruelty, and I don't like it, and I don't know how we're going to handle
it. So we're not going to do that trailer.
A lot of racism.
As much as Chris Evans loves the Dumbo trailer, and he cries about the Dumbo trailer, Chris Evans, come on our podcast to talk about the Dumbo trailer if you want.
I mean, hey, anytime you want, Chris Evans.
However, it's the whole thing with children's movies that they have. Like, I mean,
they're redoing everything in live action.
Well, it's that and the fact that if one child wants to go, they at least have to have one parent that has to go. So it's automatically two times the amount of tickets that they're going to be able to sell. I cannot talk. That is two times the amount of tickets that they were able to sell. And that's why children's films usually do better, because of the fact that they're buying an adult ticket plus a child ticket, plus possibly other tickets to go with the whole selling market thing.
Yeah, and because they are redoing everything in live action, you're pulling in an entirely...
new generation.
You're literally pulling in everyone, because you're pulling in the kids that want to see it for the first time, you're pulling in their parents and family members, and you're also pulling in all of everybody else in between that's seen this movie and just loves it.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it's gonna make a bajillion dollars.
And plus, having the acting styles of Beyonce in there.
Nonetheless. Kelsey's literally like, you know what, the fucking name Beyonce is what's making this movie.
The Beehive will make sure that this movie succeeds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, this movie was gonna succeed.
They
if nobody else but Beyonce was in it.
Jon Favreau will do fine.
For the rest of his little old life.
Exactly. Residuals will be his best friend. How about, oh, you already know.
Kelsey, are you going to see this film in theaters?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am. Dolby Digital Cinema.
Hell no.
Absolutely.
Nope.
Maybe that stampede scene with that.
No! If my seat is shaking during the stampede scene, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm already going to cry during this film, obviously, because, like, obviously. Who isn't going to? But
if you don't cry during the murder scene, essentially.
When he's like, oh, like, Dad? Oh, why? Who are you? Do you have a heart or a soul? Because if you do not, then you don't cry. But if you do, you cry. So I'm not going to see this in Dolby Digital, but I will see it in IMAX because I liked your point.
Yeah.
Great, but I just don't want my seat to shake during the stampede. I'll probably have a panic attack.
Okay, don't want that, so IMAX it is.
Sounds better. Great choice.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
So we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk about If Beale Street Could Talk.
Mm-hmm. That's about right.
And welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a nice break. I hope you enjoyed your viewing on the side of the road of The Lion King and all of that, so that you were well prepared to rewatch that trailer if you weren't prepared the first time. So we're going to start chatting about If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yes.
So let's start with some behind the trailer facts.
Yeah, so we have director Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight, the Oscar-winning film Moonlight.
Enough said, right?
Enough said. And then the writer for this movie is also Barry Jenkins, but it's also based off the book by James Baldwin.
Yes, the prolific black writer. He's known for many things, including If Beale Street Could Talk, and I can't think of the other one I was going to say, so we'll just cut the silence. The composer for this episode is Nicholas Britell.
Holy shit.
It was so good.
So good.
I know. I can't wait to talk about that.
So many issues.
He also did Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, I was like, you look familiar when I saw his little picture on IMDb. And I was like, what did you just do in the year 2018? He also did the music for Vice.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Kelsey, you want to chat about the cast
a little bit? I would love to chat about the cast
because
a little bit.
Because holy shit, it is a cast.
It is a huge cast.
I saw everybody and I was like, I love you, and I love you, and I love you.
So we have Kiki Layne, Stephen James, who people would probably know him from Homecoming. Phenomenal series. Everyone should watch it.
And from the movie Selma, he played John Lewis.
Yes, yes. We have Regina King.
Oh, love her.
Amazing. Coleman Domingo.
He's from Fear the Walking Dead. That's how I knew who he was.
Oh, okay.
He's really good friends with Alicia Dunham Carey. And that's your gay connection for this episode. You are welcome, everyone.
We really need theme music for the gay connection.
Oh my god, we should. Oh my god, that's what it can be called. Instead of, or either that or the Rainbow Connection.
The Rainbow Connection, that or the gay connection.
Can I open it? Can the opening to the thing where I talk about the
licensing
Rainbow Connection
piece. I'm gonna just put out that.
No, I'm not gonna do a lot. I just want the opening two notes. I feel like you can't charge for those.
14 seconds, I think, is the buffer.
Is that a true fact?
I think so.
Great, we'll do 10 seconds.
We have Tayona Paris, Michael Ellis, Ebony Obsidian. Dominique Thorne, Diego Luna, people would know him from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Finn Wittrock, people would know him from American Horror Story. Ed Skrein, he's an actor, I don't remember what he's from, but I know I've seen him a lot before. And last but not least, Emily Rios. So it's a pretty small cast. Do you want to jump right in?
I do.
Great.
All right.
Holy shit.
One of my notes is just wow in all capitals.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That.
I Honestly, I had to stop this trailer a couple times because I was on the cusp crying a few times. I want to talk about the music first because I feel like a huge part of this whole trailer. So I feel like the music is an underlying connection between every single scene of the film. And I feel like it is an important factor as to what type of film this is, where, you know, does it take us, I think it takes us through like multiple years and everything, that layers upon layers. Yeah. So I feel like that is kind of like the underlying constant we have in the film, which I was crying. But again, like the type of music was just like a piano, it was like a small band almost. Oh my God. I loved it. I loved it so much.
I really liked it too. And when I was watching the trailer initially, I was like so excited to listen to the dialogue, because at the beginning, the dialogue was overlaid into it. It wasn't like what the characters were actually saying in the moments that were shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, is the whole thing going to be dialogue overlaid? Blah, blah. That would be really interesting for this trailer, especially because the last few that we've chatted about, there have been trailers with no dialogue and things like that. So I was really trying to pay attention for how this one was presenting it. And then the characters actually started to speak in the scenes that were presented to us in the trailer. So I was paying attention to that. And where the music really, hit me in, not for the first time with the trailer. Like, I was definitely very cognizant of it. I was like, ooh, this is really good. Like, I wonder who was doing this. But then at the very end, what was used for, the very last, scene in it was so good.
It was so majestic.
Almost,
yeah.
That is a really, that's a really good descriptive word, for it. That's, what I would say. That's how
it was,
I would
it was,
it.
Like,
so good.
It was magical, it was majestic. It was, which I really love, especially because of what this trailer is about. And, you know, this is a Black story. And especially because it really matches up, I feel like, with, the opening two shots of Stephen James, and I believe it was Kiki Layne who plays the other.
Yeah.
And Kiki Layne, they're both, their faces are soft. The lighting is soft, and, the music is soft and majestic, and it flows. And especially with, Black stories, where, especially in the past, you mostly get, harsher lights, harsher music, because it's supposed to, you know, the pain, the anger, the struggle that, people have, which is all very true and valid. But to have something that's very light and airy and just flowy and, moves and everything is so important to tell for Black stories, because it's not usually that way.
Right.
And even so, a lot of my notes say, Moonlight, I know, Moonlight, I love Moonlight, and some of the scenes reminded me of Moonlight, but I was like, I love Moonlight, but it's harsh. It is the struggle, the pain, there is, so much torture that's going, on with, Trevante's, character and everything, but I feel like this one, on the other side, it's the struggle, but it's also the loving nature of
It's the struggle, but it's also, the light.
Exactly. So I feel like that's why a lot of the sound and music kind of just intertwined really well and turned into this,
Kelsey is doing some beautiful
interpretive
dance. hand and arm motions to describe majestical and musical.
There's so much, it's just the movement of the trailer, and it doesn't stop. There's no, there's harsh edits, but they work,
Yeah, I wish some of the edits weren't quite so harsh.
That's true.
But, and at the very end, it's they're outside and they're walking, and it's this beautiful, it's almost their walking scene is so light and airy. It's like watching a dance.
I was just about to say that.
Oh my God, Kelsey, when did we become the same person?
10 years ago.
But yeah, it's like watching a choreographed dance.
Yeah,
which
that's
is,
I think that's why I was trying to emulate.
That's why Kelsey was
dancer.
Literally doing an interpretive dance on the other side of this table while we're recording.
But it was just so.
It reminds. So this is gonna be a weird way to segue it, but when you see a really well and beautifully, like, choreographed fight scene that it looks like a dance, and you're like, wow, that looked so, like, fluid and beautiful and, like, just so well done, and everything was so in sync, it was like watching a dance.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it didn't remind me of that in the, but, like, in that way where it was just, like, everything went so well together that it was, like, that was perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Everything moves on to the next, and I
yes.
feel like that's what this film is about, because it's saying, like, it's this, it's really the journey, it's not the journey of the parents, it's the journey of the child. I mean, that's what we're kind of watching. We're watching this woman fall in love with this man, you know, have sex with this guy, and find out that she's pregnant, and have this support system. 90% of the time, I mean, I know the mother is like, she brought like...
Yeah, we'll
like,
have to see a little bit more of where exactly everything goes, but yeah.
But from what I've seen in the trailer, everyone was like, this is amazing, this is awesome, especially in a time, in a different era, you know, I mean, I'm talking about like probably, was it like the 70s or something? Or
I would think earlier than that.
60s?
Because of...
definitely not 50s, I feel
I'm
like...
I'm gonna actually stop it.
Yeah.
It is set in the early 1970s.
I'm just surprised,
like, because like...
It,
so, like, I understand,
racism,
like, that
so
racism... Happened. No. Kelsey, I'm aware. But, like, the way they presented it made it seem like a very, like...
1950s.
Immediately post end of segregation.
I mean, that happened in the 60s.
No, I know. But, like, the way they presented it was, like, that it was going to be, like, right in the middle of it.
Right,
or, like,
right.
immediately post...
They, like, especially with the scene with the cop, you know? And
yeah. Like, where the cop's right outside,
right.
and you're like...
You're like, oh, this
well,
is gonna
fuck.
Happen. But I feel like the story, compared to Moonlight, seems a bit more story-forward, rather where Moonlight...
Than character-forward.
Yeah. Whereas,
because that was, like, following him just as he grew up, and that was, like, following
right.
his character and, like, watching him develop and grow and, like, his arc.
Right.
And this, I agree, it's going to be a little bit more story-focused.
I feel like Moonlight, to me, was more of an art piece. It wasn't...
Mm.
I felt... Because there was a lot of scenes in Moonlight where it was, you know, lights and character and no sound and everything, where it
yeah.
was more art-focused, which is great and it was amazing, don't get me wrong, but I feel like this is more story-forward and I really appreciate that, and I
like
Barry Jenkins's way of storytelling, too, so...
Like, I really hope, now that you're talking about it, like, I really do hope that the way it's being portrayed in this trailer... So I really hope the trailer isn't misleading us, because I feel like with this kind
it
of
can.
Like story and plot, that if this is directed in a similar way to Moonlight and things like that, it's going to feel really disjointed, and it's I feel like
yeah.
it's not going to flow very well. So I'm really hoping that the way that they're presenting how we're going to see this story in the film, like through this trailer, is actually what it's going to be like. Like
yeah.
I hope it isn't a similar direct. Tutorial style to Moonlight.
I agree.
Do you get what I mean?
No, I know what you
okay.
mean. It's, you feel as though it's going to be...
Like, it shouldn't be an art piece.
No, it should
this
it should
be
a,
following the story.
Exactly, because it already was a story written by James Baldwin.
Right.
Like, the flow is already there.
Yeah.
We
just
need
hope
it.
We don't, like, try to make it into
right.
an art piece.
Exactly. Because I feel like it shouldn't. I mean, it
right.
should and it shouldn't at the same time.
It would just be really hard, and I feel like that it would be very...
Right.
It would not be...
It wouldn't
be playing fair with your audience at this point in the trailer.
Right, because
because
the trailer is projecting is a cohesive story.
Right.
From
and
start
not,
to finish, and not like... I think we've discussed it before. It's like part A to part B, and then we go to C.5, and like, you know...
Right.
You know, that whole little disjoint...
Yeah, where it's like... Part A to part B to part E.
Right.
Maybe jumping back to part D and then moving forward to J.
And from at least what I've seen in the trailer where she's going to talk to him like in the prison,
right.
I feel like there is going to be maybe some time jumps.
Oh yeah. And
time jumps
which is
fine
as long as they're not like giant.
Like you're gonna go from 1970 to 1992 and then we're gonna go back to 1985.
Right.
Maybe.
And like if you're jumping all over the place in the timeline, then it just gets a little confusing and
right.
just doesn't make the story feel as fluid as this trailer did.
Right. The trailer was so just a chef's kiss of a trailer. It's honestly one of my favorite trailers of
it
this year
really
so
good.
Far. I mean that we've reviewed, but it's just, you know, one of the things you hope, you know, before you see the movie, you know? And
Regina King.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Can we just talk about her for a minute?
Because, how she's amazing.
Oh my God. Yes. So good.
Mm-hmm. I think
I have her name written like about 48 times in my notes.
It's like, oh, we gotta talk about Regina King.
It just says Regina King and then another spot. Oh my God, Regina King. I can't.
I think there was some very, I don't want to say powerful voices because they're all powerful.
There are
but
some
like,
very powerful lines.
Yes.
And powerful voices.
Yes.
I do love a good line of dialogue that I can keep in my head for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, do you have it written down what your line was? Because I do.
I don't, because they were all amazing.
No, well, there was that like the one standout where, you know, it's like the kind of like the cathartic like
line, it was the one about the
unbow your head, sister.
Yeah, that one. And
I was like, okay, I'm dead. I'm fine.
The one that's like, this child was born in sin, like, really, like, whipped my
that
head
was,
around.
That was, like, well delivered.
Yeah.
But the, when she just,
unbow
like,
your head
kind of
was
quietly
like,
said that, and I was like,
you had a heart attack,
I was
essentially.
Like, I'm fine, I guess. I just really enjoy a really well delivered and really, like, well written, like, iconic-y kind of line. And also, I love it when it's, like, in a person that's a really good orator's voice.
Bill Nye.
I love him. Yep. Always comes back
always
to Bill
Always comes
Nye.
Back to Bill Nye.
I could listen to him talk. Fucking, he could say whatever. He could talk about anything, and I would just be like, you just say things in such a great way, and, like, your voice was just made to, like,
made to talk.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I can't.
I mean, I,
so that was, like, the line that, like, kind of, like, it's, like, one of those lines that, like, is, like, that stick out, like, that line that's supposed to give you the chills in the middle of the movie. Like, if you think about, like, flashing back, like, it brought me back to, like, watching the trailer.
Yeah,
that's what
there
that thing's called. We totally do a little podcast about it. the trailer for The Green Book and Mahershala Ali's, like, main line being, like, that's because you're white, I think. Or it's, like, that's
something of that
because
nature.
You're not black or something. And I was, and it was similar to that kind of feeling where it's like, oh my goodness, that line is really what's going to stick with me through this whole thing. That black enough.
That black enough white.
Yeah. It was something along that. I didn't write down the whole line in quotes in my notes from the Breeding Book. Sorry, everybody.
It's okay.
But it was just a line like that where it's like, you're like, oh my gosh, that's going to be like the halfway mark through the film and it's going to be great and that's where I'm going to sob and. So really, really good, and I wish we had a little bit more of how the other characters really fit into the story other than
them being then just like, oh, this is the family.
Like, I wish I knew exactly, like, how Regina King's character
was related to, you know, her.
Yeah, her and them.
Her,
like,
you know,
just stuff like that, like, you know, but I'm not picky.
Okay.
But, so my big note that's like
that
85
like
lines long.
Okay.
All right, this is going to be a well thought out and laid out because
okay.
it's related to my feelings about queer representation in media. Everybody buckle the fuck up.
Marianne has literally done multiple professional talks about this, so.
Hey, everybody. That's why the San Diego Comic-Con chat is my jam. So, I hate that in so many movies, we have to have a black male character go to jail.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But the only thing I can say, I'll let you finish.
No. Okay. Like, I get that there's good context for it in this time period and movie. And I understand how it's going to relate to the overall plot. And I understand that it is an accurate representation of the criminalization, and don't bang on the table, right?
Because
don't
it's gonna,
thank you, because that's how I couldn't edit it out last week. I just get really emotional when
I
talk. And Kelsey dances with her hands, and I slam my fists on the table. It's just how I express my emotions. And I understand that, like, we over-criminalize and we over, arrest and over, imprison black people. males, and that is ridiculous and painful and enraging. Yeah. But it just sucks that this is all you, that this is what you have to always see. And it's just, it like relates to like how I feel like when I think about like queer representation in right. movies and things like that. It's like sometimes you just want something happy without someone dying, or right. like tons of homophobia and things like that, and you just want a good story. And yes, it's important to represent racism and homophobia and things like that that are accurate and things that are like important to story because they're important to the struggle, and that's part of like defining people as characters and defining a time period and defining like a group of people.
Like, or and, times three, like time, space, and location and everything.
It's yes, like, and it's like, and like it's important to like understand and really show the realities of a group of people, like an oppressed group, and like it's something that you can't leave out, and you can't have every movie be like ignorant or like totally missing it or anything like that. But it's just sucks so much. Yeah. And it's just like sometimes you just want, like when you're starting out a film like that and you're just like, this is gonna be a great film, and then you right, see you that so happy, and you're like, and come the fuck on, I'm just so done with being angry about how
right.
the I mean, world is what she is.
But we have to understand though is also that this book is written by James Baldwin, and it's also who is a black man, and Barry Jenkins is also a black man, but and we cannot say we can't tell these stories from people who are, who have lived this, you know, possibly have lived this life, lived, you know, these certain events that, you know, that understand that, you know, this is an unfortunate reality of our situation. I do understand that, you know, it is, we do want things to be happy, but we cannot oppress people that want to tell these stories.
No, I know, and I'm not saying that.
No, no, I understand. I completely agree with you. I'm just trying to bring a different perspective.
No. I totally get that perspective because as I was thinking about it, I know that we can't do that, and I know that right. people didn't do that in queer representation, which is why I was like, we can't totally ignore the homophobia, we right. can't totally ignore racism, but I wish that we didn't have to have it in such a way in every single film, because it's like,
right.
like if you...
No, I understand, and it's just, it's such a hard, harsh reality like, that we live in, because it's like, this is the way our world unfortunately works, where we have to tell the struggle stories.
I know, and struggle's part of everybody's story, and it's part of every single story, and I understand, but I just, like,
I feel like
was this, so mad. I was like, oh, because if this was a queer story, and then somebody ended up dying, which is, like, the
which
trope
is
and all that.
Which happens all
the time. I was like, I would have, like, that, it's just...
You need a balance, and this is what I'm trying
right.
to say.
And like, I understand that this was written for. It's not something originally written by Barry Jenkins, blah blah blah. Blah.
But
it's
like,
written by
it's,
James Baldwin.
But if we had those happy films, we would have those balances of, you know, it's a happy, you know, story about a black couple, like, and we have the stories about the black couple that struggles within the 1970s. If we have those balances, then it'd be like more of a welcomed idea. But the fact that we're always getting these struggle stories is an issue. But it's important to tell. It's a really weird fine line gray area that we have in film and media and art, especially because of the fact that we want, you know, people of color to express, you know, and have the privilege to express their struggle. But it's also, it's like the struggle has always been, and we need to have some light and happiness.
I know.
And
it's
so
just
hard.
Like we need to be telling stories with good representation that are not all about struggle for our youth. And that is so important. And that is what really makes a big difference in the lives of these youth.
It
and
really
they need
does.
To they
no,
do I'm... need to have their struggle understood and shown. And I get that because I would be pissed.
As
and I would be really upset.
We can't
no,
decide
know, but,
what people have, what people can or cannot tell, though.
I know, but this is like, this was like my, I'm not saying
no,
we shouldn't tell these stories. I understand. But it's just like, as an, to an oppressed group, you need to be giving them also, like what you were saying, the balance. And we need to also, like, really, people need to think about that as well. Like, this is how ideas get communicated to the youth through media. And if we are not giving them ideas through media and representation that is not only accurate to all aspects of their life, so understanding the struggle and showing it, but we also need to make sure that these stories that we're getting for them also do have good endings for them, because if you don't show that, then they just, you're not giving them hope and things to show them that your life can be good because it can be like this.
Right.
And that is something that's definitely missing across all forms for like lots of different oppressed groups in media.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
because we're not getting this chance, because that is what people not from those oppressed groups, white people aren't going to pay to see happy stories about black people.
No, they're not, because they want to see, they want to have that white guilt of saying like, oh, these people were so oppressed at the time. And same thing with straight people going to see these movies about, you know, people in the LGBTQI community, you know, struggling to be like, to have a lover, to be like, well, do this or that. It's the discussion we had in Colette, like we had in Colette, because of the fact that, you know, but the thing, Colette was a, not what I want to say, a strange film, but it was a film that turned that genre on its head, because she had a happy, you know, relationship with this man. She had a relationship with this transgender man, and it, she did succeed in that relationship with him. And it's, I think it's, we don't know the ending of this film. So we can't say this film is bad. I mean, I understand your argument with, you know, black men always going to prison. That's a huge issue. But what we're seeing is only a trailer. We don't know the ending of this film. We don't know. I have still haven't seen If Beale Street Could Talk. And I'm pissed off at myself that I didn't see this in theaters. But again, we can't automatically pin this movie as a struggle film. Even though we do see struggle in this film, we do not know the ending to place it as a struggle film.
I know. And it wasn't even specifically about this film, obviously.
No, obviously, it that's more encompassing,
like,
you know,
I just
argument.
Saw that and I was like, well, this sucks. And it, then, it, I, then
you know,
I was
but the thing is,
upset.
It's also, we're starting, I hate that it's 2000, we always bring up, we hate that it's this X amount of year and we're only starting to see this, but we're starting to see these films with more hope and more dreams. We have, I mean, obviously, that are more targeted towards children. We have Black Panther. We do have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which you'll hear in the next episode, about, you know, all about empowerment and understanding who people are and understanding that people can rise above, you know, to make yourself, I don't want to say a better person, but understanding the world around you and how you fit in that world, to not struggle and to rise and to understand that this is you and that's okay, and giving children hope about that. I kind of just blacked out in that little speech, so I don't know where I'm going with
it's
this.
It's okay.
But we're starting to see that these sort of films are turning that narrative of struggle and turning that into a more positive notion. I hate that we still have to use the backbone of struggle to have, you know, people of color rise in media and film. But we're starting to understand that more, that white people just don't see movies. And white people don't want to just see these, you know, there's other people that go to the movies. You know, there are, everyone goes sees film. And I think that's what media is changing into and finally trying to understand their demographic, like after 6,500 fucking years. being broadcasted.
Kelsey was literally trying to think of an exact, like,
oh,
zero.
Like, it's never going to happen.
She was like, fuck it, I'm just going to say 65 million years and call it a day.
Media is finally understanding who their demographic is and understanding that, you know, if we
or
do...
Trying
or
trying
they're trying their best. trying to understand that if we produce these films and understand that these stories exist, finally, then, you know, then we can understand and get better pushback. We can understand, we can try and change the narrative a little bit more each time that we have this opportunity. And I understand that it is a struggle film and that's not good. We need more happy stuff and I completely agree with you. But again, it's just a preview.
Kelsey's like, calm your damn self.
I don't know.
It's
not. No.
But like, And I know that we don't know, it's more about than just this individual trailer. It's just about like media in general. Just kind of got like triggered from that one scene. I think that this is gonna be more of a movie on that lighter side that is giving that kind of hope. So it's definitely not about Beale Street Could Talk. It is about just media and film in general.
When I saw her on the phone, when I saw him on the phone, my mind, I didn't even have to hear the gate locks. You automatically know. And which is like a shitty thing because it's like, well, no, you want to think that they're like at a payphone or whatever. You don't want to say, oh, he's in prison. It's like, oh, he, you know, did something that a white man got angry about and then, you know, falsely accused him of something, which probably happens.
Which is like, you know, what it kind of seemed like.
Kind of seemed like in the trailer. But it's also, it's like, we do see, you know, a black single female, you know, raising two children happily. You know, it doesn't seem like there is much, and I can't say this because, again, it's just a preview. There seems to be a lot more ease.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, this, and the trailer is portrayed in a way that very much is going to make it seem, and I hope this trailer is going to be like a much lighter, even though there's obviously going to be the struggle involved, which is what I was talking about.
Right, right.
But like,
and I'm not
be a lighter film.
Yeah.
But my stuff was just about everything in general, not about this exact film.
Right. I feel like.
Those were feelings on.
Just media on its own, which general. I completely agree, and I feel like there needs to be something better. There needs to be, you know,
Need to do better.
Right, we do need to do better. And we need more, you know, people of color in romantic comedies that are not just the black sidekick.
We just need to do better in media.
And I hate that this beautiful trailer has to bring up such ugliness of
media. Because it's such a beautiful trailer. We're talking about how fluid and beautiful and majestic, but it just, like, at the same time, it breaks you down.
Right. This sucks. This sucks. This really sucks. In terms of what it's commenting on, what it's, you know, pulling the needles and threads from, you know. But I just think that we cannot say anything to say, like, we can't tell these stories because I understand. Okay. I'm just trying to, you know, say it's like, we have privilege as white people. We have to understand that we have to push these films up as well as the other films because we cannot say what is deemed the struggle film or not. I'm not part of the LGBTQIA community, so I really just have no say in this, pretty much. I have no say whether or not we can or cannot say what type of film this is. We can only really take it as face value.
Right, and, like, obviously with representation in media, you need to support, all forms. Like, it goes back to, the very, important and very, debated discussion of, is any representation good?
Right.
Not necessarily. Is bad representation better than no representation? Exactly. And you go into all of that and, like...
I think that's, you know, especially...
That's a very long conversation not right now.
Yeah, that's a bonus episode discussion. Because, not even, I think that's a 2-hour, you know,
A Marianne Comes With a Slideshow.
It's a Marianne Comes With and her LGBTQIA allies than just me. Who can talk to about all aspects of representation. We good?
I hope everyone enjoyed.
That was a very solid... We're not even...
Anyways. Well, if I had known, I would have let you ask that
question. No, I really wanted to hear that. Oh. It was a really amazing discussion. High five.
You just... Kelsey said high five and stuck her hand out as if to shake my hand.
If it was to come back in theaters, would you see it in theaters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Same. I just personally would want to read the book first. Because I feel like I would get the emotionality better, and then to understand the character's motivations better, personally, especially in such a free-flowing trailer like this, you would want to see, more so what they were thinking first, going back into my interpretive dance, thought process, then I would want to see the film. Just because I just want to understand
and
more of the
backbone.
And because
you want to see the book before the movie.
Yeah, sure, why not? You know me too well.
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's finally it, everybody.
I know. Oh my gosh. Want to do some business?
Don't let me talk anymore. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, let's do a little business.
Second time we're doing business tonight.
Wow, I know. We already covered so much of it earlier. So, this episode is going to be posted
Tuesday.
After the Oscars. But of course, I hope everyone followed along a little bit in our conversations on Twitter. And we have another bonus episode coming to you later.
Next week or so. We'll figure it out.
We've got another bonus episode coming to you on our same theme of following along for Black History Month coming up to you real soon.
Yes. And so you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Too Many Trailers. That's TWO Many Trailers. If you want to scream at us in a healthy way, not a mean way.
If you
want
to yell at us in the way that I just yelled for a little bit about representation in media, I'm always happy to chat with people. So send me a really long email. You can email us at toomanytrailers@gmail.com. TWOManyTrailers@gmail.com.
If you don't want to miss an episode, if you liked what you heard, feel free to rate us 5 stars and subscribe in iTunes. We have episodes every other week with spontaneous bonus episodes.
Posted whenever.
Every so often, you know. We do our best.
We do our best to just talk to each other all the time.
Yeah. Is that toxic codependency? Probably. But you know what?
Yikes. Oh, man. She's probably right. But yeah, so you can also find us on Anchor and Overcast.
Mm-hmm. If you happen to have those two apps on your phone.
Yeah.
Or wherever you get podcasts.
Yeah, and if you need us on a different platform, like, feel free to reach out to us on social media.
Yell
and
at
we
us.
Can probably make that happen.
We'll try our best.
Yes, try our best.
I still haven't figured out Google Play. So.
But we could. So
eventually.
If you need it, you just tell us. A little motivation goes a long way.
All right, we love you guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.